Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. Better late than never. We are with you. I'm Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, how are you, mate?
I'm great, man. Do we have some action in the NFL to talk about?
We do. I probably took a bad week to take a day off on Tuesday. Jeff, I can tell you, actually, I've just been in the NFL UK office, and as part of Wellness Week, they've got a masseuri helping all of the staff get over the stresses and strains of the London game. So I've just had a massage, mate. I'm feeling good.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. How big time are you?
Jeff, I sat in the chair the wrong way. I didn't realize you knelt on the chair and leant forward. So I turned around and sat in the chair, facing the completely the wrong way. And the chap had to tell me to turn around. So
he must have thought, what kind of character do I have here?
Yeah, I think he was thinking dumb rookie. But I feel much more chilled out now. I'm feeling, I'm feeling positive about Jay Cutler. I'm not going to go that far, but it was very nice. Yeah, we have a lot. We have a lot to talk about, but I will just say I'm feeling relaxed from the tip of my fingers. I had a massage from my fingers all the way up to my bald spot.
Hey, let me just tell you something, buddy. This will pop your relaxed balloon. My man Rob Ryan is now in the UK, and you will be on set with him this weekend on Sky. So get yourself ready, because it's going to be fun.
Oh my goodness! I'm gonna imagine Coach Rob is not going to be worrying about studio etiquette. He's not going to worry about minding his P's and Q's. He's not going to listen to any counts. He's just going to talk football and have fun, isn't he, Jeff?
Oh, he's the best. I'm telling you, he is. Rob is Rob. And you're going to, no matter what setting you find him, he's just going to be him. And I think his honesty and his genuineness and his love of people and fun and all that's going to really come across to the viewers. And I think that the fans in the UK are really, really fortunate to have him for, I think it's going to be a month, isn't it?
It is a month. We've got Rob Ryan joining us for the next month, which obviously we're week 9 now. Week 10, actually. I was just going to plug this, Jeff, because fans can vote on our games. So we often see so much about our game choices and what games are shown and why you're not showing my team. Well, fans can have their say in week 10. So you can go to skysports.com/NFL. And you can vote for the Week 10 early game, and you can vote for the Week 10 late game. So, I'm not going to influence your vote in any way, dear listeners, but I want to watch Saints at Bills in the early game and Texans at Rams, please. Thank you very much.
Hardly biased. That's like a Central American presidential election.
Yeah, exactly. Fake news. Let's look at some of these big stories then, Jeff, and then we'll make our picks for week 9 in the NFL, because the trade deadline came on Tuesday, and this was more active than I can ever remember it being. It was, we'll go through them, we'll dig into some of them soon. But first of all, as you look at this, do you think we'll see more of this now? The NFL did push back the trade deadline. They didn't want to push it back any further so that players can be kind of rented for playoff runs, but feels like it means that we're going to see this kind of activity. What are your thoughts?
I think it's good. I think it's good for the fans. I think it's good for the game. I think it's good for the teams. And I was really fascinated by some of the guys, Neil, that moved, because you're not talking about just fringe players or special teams guys or backup. You're talking about frontline guys. Mm. And in every one of the cases, you can look at it. You can really go through a lot of thought in terms of why teams gave up a player, what they were looking for in return. Some of them were really, frankly, surprising to me, and others, not so much. But each of them, I think, was unique, and we can spend time on every one of them, because they're all fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, it probably makes sense at this stage to do that rather than break down the games from last weekend. Let's look at some of these big news stories in the NFL, and then we'll make our picks for Week 9 as well. But, Jeff, I think, interestingly, you know, we felt like those teams that would be offloading players would be those in the early stages or the middle stages of a massive rebuild. So we were watching the Colts to see who they offloaded. We were watching the Browns. We were watching the 49ers. But actually, you could argue that the teams that have offloaded high-profile players are, for the most part, are all in the playoff race. So you've got the Bills send Kelvin Benjamin away to... Panthers send Kelvin Benjamin to Buffalo. You've got the Dolphins sending Jay Ajayi to Philadelphia. The Patriots sending Jimmy Garoppolo to the 49ers. And the Texans... doing a swap, they get Jeremy Lane and a third and second round picks 2018-2019, and they send Dwayne Brown to Seattle. So all of those teams that actually lost a high profile player, you could argue, are making a playoff run right now. So that was interesting.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, Neil. I mean, it's just like in each case, there's more to the trade, certainly, than just, I mean, you look at what, and let's go back to the Darius trade right before the
Marcel Darius,
You're talking about Marcel Darius, the Pro Bowl player that the Bills give up for a sixth, which could become a fifth, conditional fifth. I mean, you know, you think about that. How many Pro Bowl defensive tackles do you find in the fifth round, even if he plays well and they get a fifth one? So there's more to that story than meets the eye. And I think that there are a couple cases where guys, I won't say wore out their welcome, but it just wasn't a fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jay's trade from Miami to Philadelphia was a case of, you know, of that quite happening. I mean, I saw his reaction, Neil. I watched very closely the game last weekend, and I saw a couple times his reaction coming off the field, Jay.
Yep.
And he was extremely frustrated and voiced that frustration towards Adam Gates a couple times. And I think Adam's comments about, you know, how you can read through it. You know, you can read, as they say, between the lines if you coached it all, that it was just a situation where the marriage didn't work anymore. And I think it was obviously because you're talking about guy led in, you know, I mean, that's a damn good football player. And you look at what they got back for him, and you just go, why would you do that? Now, I know that everybody's going to talk about, you know, they thought he was a one contract player when he came out of Boise State because of his knee injury and yada 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 yada. But if you're the Eagles, you're saying, I mean, here's another weapon we can add, and now with LeGarrette Blount and him and all the weapons they have outside and this great quarterback that I think this really gives the Eagles certainly the post position, if you will, for the, you know, to make a deep playoff run and to win that NFC East.
Yeah, definitely a worthwhile move for the Eagles to kick the tires on Jay Ajayi for a fourth round draft pick. As you said, we often hear of thunder and lightning combinations at running back. We've got thunder and even more thunder now with LeGarrette Blount and Jay Ajayi. Jeff, I'm probably inclined to agree with you. I think Adam Gase, although he didn't work directly with Bill Belichick, I feel like he's been heavily influenced by Bill Belichick, either working for Josh McDaniels or working for Nick Saban. There are kind of tentacles that spread out from Belichick, and they touch Adam Gase. And when I spoke to Adam Gase over the summer, he said, I want guys that are going to be team first. I want guys that are going to love football. And I think you're right. I think there's, you know, we'll kind of never know unless we're a fly on that locker room wall. But I feel like this is not all about football. This is about what Jay brought to the locker room and brought to the team in that respect. Because, as you say, it's a relatively low price that the Eagles have had to pay.
No, exactly. And again, you know, those are kind of trades where you look at it as if you're the Dolphins, you say it's addition by subtraction, right? And what I'm saying is the environment, the air in the locker room, and in no way am I saying that he was a malcontent or any of that. I just know how it is in pro sports that when a guy's frustrated with, you know, he had such high expectations coming into the season, and so did the Dolphins. And so both parties are frustrated with their lack of offense, and, you know, that sometimes manifests itself. That frustration comes out by both coaches and players, and it just creates an environment where it's better that they separate and, you know, go on their way. And I think the same thing with Brown with the Texans. You don't give away a Pro Bowl left tackle and I don't know if, you know, I don't know what Lane's health status is, because I know you have to pass a physical and there's some concerns about his health. For a cornerback that's hurt, unless there's an issue. Now, he was the most, you know, he had the contentious holdout, and then he was the most vocal about the owners, quote, in, you know, about the inmates running the asylum or the prisoners running the, you know, prison or whatever.
Running the prison was the comment. Yeah, and I think Dwayne Brown only ended his holdout to put himself in the shop window.
Yeah, and I think there's some truth to that too. And so if you're Bill O'Brien, you got a guy that, you know, and you're the owner, you know, that, I'm sure they feel better now that's a guy that's stirring the pot, and so let's move him out of here and give him a chance to restart and reboot his career and his reputation and his image and all those things. And, you know, because they're scoring points without him. I mean, they were horrible the first week. They were horrible the first week, but that was when Tom Savage was playing quarterback. So, you know, I think they've proven that they can, you know, that they can win and move the football without him. So, you know, it's an opportunity for them to, you know, do the same thing I think that Miami was doing.
Yeah, I feel like these teams that offloaded, they felt like they were in kind of untenable situations. And we'll talk about Jimmy Garoppolo in a moment and what was going to come up with him becoming a free agent. But I think Dwayne Brown was kind of done with Houston. And the same with Jay. The Jay deal makes a lot of sense for Philadelphia because it's a relatively low price. And if you watch that, what was an outstanding game between Houston and Seattle last Sunday, Jeff, the Seahawks absolutely need a Dwayne Brown because, you know, Russell Wilson is spectacular. He was just a little magician in that game. But he's going to get himself knocked out of the rest of the season at some point behind that offensive line. So kind of all of these moves, you can kind of nod your head and say, yeah, the pickups made by the teams who grabbed the player, you know, the Bills were relatively light at wide receiver and they add Kelvin Benjamin. That's a nice situational target for Tyrod Taylor as well.
No question, Neil. I mean, there's a big guy with a huge catching range. And, you know, a guy that Dean and Sean McDermott both know from their time in Carolina. Now, what was really interesting about that one to me is, you know, Cam Newton singled him out a little bit over a week ago as a guy that you would want in a foxhole with you if, you know, you're in a foxhole. And yeah. You know, he kind of, you know, apparently they are very close friends. And that trade was made. And normally when you're, and this is kind of good insight for the listeners, when you have a quarterback who is the face of the franchise, if you're going to move a guy that he's close with, right, particularly a guy on offense that he's close with, you're going to pay him the respect of letting him know it first before you do it. And they didn't do this in this case with Cam. So I think that there's a little drama there that again, like you say, unless we're flies on the wall, we'll never know exactly what the true story is. But, you know, again, why would you move him for, again, what did you get back? You're in a playoff race, right? You're in the playoff race. You move an asset and don't get anything back while you're in the playoff race. They're not offloading players, right, to try and get Cal salary cap space or draft picks or any of those other things because they're in a rebuild. That team has playoff aspirations, divisional championship aspirations, and you move an asset and don't get an immediate asset back. That's a little bit surprising to me.
Absolutely. I'm not going to cry too many tears if Cam Newton feels disrespected. He's done that to journalists and fans enough this year, so he can have some back for a little while. Let's talk about Jimmy Garoppolo, Jeff. This was a second-round pick the Patriots received for Jimmy Garoppolo, who heads to the San Francisco 49ers. First of all, this is, you know, what does this say about Tom Brady and how long they feel he's going to be available? Because they've, in the past few months, they've offloaded Jacoby Brissett and Jimmy Garoppolo, and Bill Belichick said their quarterback room was just unsustainable.
Well, I think he's correct in that, you know, as they tried to find a suitor for Garoppolo in the offseason, but the price that they were asking was real high. It's first time, you know, you're talking about really expensive.
Yeah.
As they got further, as the year went on and you get further and further into this, I think they recognized the fact that you were not going to have both of them next year. And what is a little bit unusual in my mind about this one, Neil, is typically what Belichick has always done is unload the veteran. I mean, you go all the way back to Willie McGinnis.
Mm-hmm.
You unload the veteran right as the downhill slide begins, right? Or prior to the downhill slide in his career. And then you get your young guy a chance. In this case, they went the other way. The young, promising guy, the one that was supposed to be the heir apparent, he gets moved. And you know what, Neil? It was crazy over here in the States on talk radio and all. You know, everybody said, you know, the prominent thought was that this was only because of the relationship that Tom Brady has with Mr. Kraft, and that Belichick has 100% control of personnel moves with the exception of that guy.
And the quarterback position.
And, and I think that's really fascinating. I think that's probably more trumped up than is actually the case. But, you know, this is surprising to me in that now you've got a 40-year-old guy who is your present and your future.
Mm.
Because Brian Hoyer isn't the answer. He'll be a dependable backup, and he knows the system and all that other stuff, you know. But how long can Tom Brady go? You're really now banking on drafting a guy, and he's going to have to play early, right? So you look at the quarterback class, and where they draft, I don't see a guy that's going to be available for him. I just don't see it, you know.
Right.
And I don't see one, you know, Josh Rosen. You know, everybody's crazy about Sam Darnold at USC. I'm not that. I see too many, you know, mistakes, and he's got another year of eligibility. So, I mean, I just don't know. I mean, this is to me a little bit of a surprise one.
Yeah, they would.
But I understand.
Yeah.
I understand it though.
Well, yeah, Patriots would have been up against it with the salary cap, Jeff, because franchise tagging Jimmy Garoppolo, he wanted to be a starter or paid like a starter. So if you're franchise tagging Jimmy Garoppolo next March, then you're paying $22 million to him. Tom Brady's cap hit next year is going to be $23 million. So that's $45 million wrapped up in two players. And we talk about Patriots and, you know, they have shown in various areas this season a lack of depth at certain positions. So they kind of need to restock the roster, so, you know, to have that much money tied up in two guys. But it was telling because Tom Brady is 40 years of age, and, you know, we all felt that Garoppolo was going to be that long-term answer. And Jeff, interesting how we always say in the NFL, when you drop a story into the lake, and then the ripple effect and how it spreads out and it affects so many people. That's a couple of less suitors now for Kirk Cousins, because you've got to imagine the Rams are set with Jared Goff. We thought that would be a very obvious one. And Kyle Shanahan was an obvious connection to Kirk Cousins. And you've got to think that the 49ers are going to give Garoppolo either the franchise tag or sign him to a long-term deal. I can't imagine they're signing him now or trading for him now just for an 8-game audition, especially as Kyle Shanahan has said, we may not play Jimmy Garoppolo this year. So, you know, this is stretching out to Kirk Cousins as well. Although I do feel when you look at Jacksonville or the Giants or Cleveland, the Jets, heck, even the Patriots, if Tom Brady's getting on a bit, Kirk Cousins is still going to have his suitors. But those were two obvious ones because of the offensive coordinator connection. And now maybe Kirk has to take a bit more of a step into the unknown.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think it's a great point you make, Neil. And think about it now. If you're Kirk Cousins, you're looking at going to a place that, you know, now you're going into the unknown, right? When you go to San Francisco, had he gone to San Francisco, he's going to work with a guy that he knows, a system that he all that, right? Mm-hmm. Now you take it and flip the script, and he's got to go to Cleveland. He's got to go to the Jets. He's got to go wherever. It's not quite as an attractive scenario for him or his agent. Monetarily, it will be, but you know, just there's more to this than money. These guys want to win championships, and you know, so I think that adds. If you're the Redskins, you're sitting there going, "Thank you," because you know, really, do you want to go to Cleveland and end your career in Cleveland?
No, you're going to stay in Washington, aren't you? But now you take a lesser deal.
Yeah, either a lesser deal or you know, I mean. So it's an interesting deal. There's talk, and this is really fascinating. The Browns continually shoot themselves in the foot.
Oh, this was ridiculous. I mean, continually. I was gonna get to
this. Yeah. This one was almost beyond belief to me.
Yeah.
Right? Where you have a trade made for a quarterback, and it's right at the deadline, and instead of filing the papers, you're high-fiving and, you know, jackassing around in the draft room. So then, when you file the papers, you file them after the deadline, and the trade voided by the league, which it should be because that's the rules.
Yeah.
So think about this now, Neil. You're Sam Darnold, and let's say you're the top-rated quarterback at the end of the college season, and you have an extra year to go back to USC. Would you want to go to Cleveland with their history with quarterbacks?
There's no way.
Or would you say, yeah, exactly. I know I'm going to make the money. I'll take out a huge insurance policy on my career. I'll play another year at USC, and then I'll roll the dice that I get a chance to go to a better place.
Jeff, if I'm having to go and play quarterback at Cleveland, I'm going to be like Rodney Dangerfield in that film Back to School. I'm going to be like 60 years old and still in university. What Jeff's referring to is the trade for A.J. McCarron. So Hugh Jackson really liked A.J. McCarron. Of course, he knows all about him from his time at the Bengals. And the Browns offered second round and third round picks in next year's draft to grab A.J. McCarron. And this is for the Browns, who are trying to stockpile draft picks. This is a big deal. This is a potential difference maker. And like Jeff said, they didn't get the paperwork filed in time. And Jeff, they reported to the Cleveland Plain Dealer newspaper that the Browns signed their part of the paperwork and sent it to the Bengals, and the Bengals signed their part, but then the Bengals sent just the part that was signed by the Bengals to the NFL. False. Completely false. If you read that or you hear that, Browns fans, don't buy it. How a trade works in the NFL, if the Cleveland Browns have to file their own paperwork to the NFL, and then the Cincinnati Bengals filed their own paperwork to the NFL, and it corresponds in terms of what's being given up on both sides, then the trade is sanctioned. It's not like everyone has to sign the same piece of paper. So for the Browns to come out and say that is flat out false. And it's just so, isn't it just so Browns, Jeff? I mean, for Browns fans, and there were a lot of them over here last week in London. They are passionate. Really passionate. I've not been around too many Browns fans that come over from the States. And I feel like an old record, but Carson Wentz, Deshaun Watson. Now you can add A.J. McCarron to the list. You could possibly add Dak Prescott if you want to be really harsh. Derek Carr, Russell Wilson. I know some of those quarterbacks were missed by a lot of teams in the NFL, but Wentz and Watson are going to hang around Sashi Brown's neck with every touchdown pass, they push him closer to the door, because the Browns were not only, they were not only like hoping to get those guys and missed out, they were in position, they were on the clock, and they chose to have neither of them, and now they've messed it up again. I mean, for their fans, I do feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I do too. And you know what, Neil, you're exactly right. When you and I think Browns backers in the UK out there, you know, I'm throwing you bouquets, because you guys are like Browns fans everywhere. I lived in Las Vegas for a year, and one of the things that was phenomenal in Las Vegas, there was a place, a casino bar, where on Sundays you walked in there and you thought you were in the dog pound. I mean, it was unbelievable. The guys with the dog masks on throwing dog biscuits across. I mean, it was a madhouse every Sunday with Browns fans in the middle of the, you know, Nevada desert. I mean, it's just how, and if anywhere in the United States you go, you find Browns fans, people that are passionate about that football team and that city. And damn, if they just don't keep punching them in the gut. You know, like, there was a report out this week, I don't know if you saw this, Neil, that Hugh was upset that on Monday, the front office guys, the personnel guys, left the building at 5 o'clock. This is the day before the draft, the trade deadline. And your guys are out of the building at 5 o'clock in the evening? I mean, it just, so there's obviously still dysfunction in that organization that's got to get cleared up somehow. I mean, it's almost like it's cursed. I swear to God, it's like it's cursed.
Oh, because honestly,
that you can't file the paperwork correctly. I mean, that is like a fireable offense, in my opinion.
But
I
Jeff,
mean, I can't. Especially for a quarterback. Now, think about the optics of what you. The optics of what you've done, the ripple effect, like you just talked about, of what you've done, how that sets you back in so many ways. Think about free agents that you're trying to entice to go there.
Yeah, no thanks.
That's the kind of organization, you know, so the same thing. I mean, you just look at all of the ramifications that moves like that and things like that do to your organization.
And Jeff, obviously, we had the Browns over at Twickenham last week, and I'm hosting a lot of events around the games, and I'm talking to alumni and people close to the team, and all we hear is, you know, the Browns are trying to stay patient and they're trying to stick to the plan. Well, I'm now starting to wonder if there ever was a plan, Jeff, because if there was a plan, why didn't you use your second round draft pick on AJ McCarron in the offseason and then save the second rounder you used on DeShone Kizer? Instead, you use a second rounder on DeShone Kizer, then a few months later, you're using another, trying to use a second and a third rounder to grab AJ McCarron. So, is there a plan? I mean, crikey, if there is, it's probably been ripped up a few times already.
Well, I think we have to be cautious about reading too many things in with hindsight, right? Because where you got to look is, first of all, who's evaluating the players, right? Who made those decisions to, for example, take DeShone Kizer with all of the warts that he had at Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Right? Somebody's got to have to justify that. Now, in terms of the McCarron deal, you don't know if McCarron was available for a second rounder in the offseason. Right.
Right.
They may not have been shopping him at that time.
Sure.
However, the reality of it is that when you can't follow simple, you know, league protocols to get a trade done, that is reflective of ineptitude, really. And I hate to use that term, but I mean, just being honest. And so when you look at their football team, they've got some good young players, right? They've got some things that make you say, this team has a chance.
They're decent on defense, Jeff. They just get worn down.
But yeah, they can't play. You can't play as much as their defenses happen to play. Right, you can't go out there and go three and out and three and out and three and out and three and out and expect your defense, with the changes in field position, your defense is going to be able to bail you out the whole game. They're not that good. They're not the 85 Bears, right? They're a better defense under Greg Williams, but they're young and they're on the come and all that stuff. But you look at them offensively, and you know, I know that was Hughes, one of the reasons why Hugh got the job, because he was supposed to be so good with quarterbacks and, you know, offensive, da da da. But right now, they're lifeless on offense. They got a really good, at least on paper, offensive line. They can't run the ball very well. And, you know, you look at it, and now, I'm going to say this. I hope for the guy that it turns out right, but my 20-some years in pro football would tell me that bringing Josh Gordon back into your locker room isn't a great thing for a young football team that's trying to get better.
Right. Yeah.
I just think that there's too much distraction. Listen, when guy, and I'm no psychologist, but I do know that when guys have drug issues, when you're an addict, when you have those kinds of problems, they don't go away, right? If you're an alcoholic or you're a drug addict for the rest of your life,
yeah.
Right? It's not going away, right? So now there's so much work, and I hope he makes it. I hope he makes it. But all indications are that ain't going to happen. And is that the kind of guy you want to bring into a young locker room?
Jeff,
you know, I don't.
Sorry, Jeff, sorry to cut you off there. You just mentioned there about, obviously, it's easy to sort of be critical in hindsight. But I wondered if you could tell us whether hindsight will be used to judge the likes of Paul DePodesta and Sashi Brown. Because, you know, do owners knock on the door of Sashi Brown and say, that Carson Wentz kid looks pretty good now, and that Deshaun Watson kid looks pretty good. What didn't we see? What didn't we like? Will that self-evaluation go on, or is that too easy to do? Does that go on? Because as fans, and you say it's a perception business, it's a perception business, Jeff, fans are going to make that comparison until those other two quarterbacks are out of the league, and media will do it as well. So,
let me tell you how one of the organizations in the league does it that I know.
Yep.
Right? If you draft a player, let's say I took you in the second round, Neil, and they're at a position, right? Let's say you're a receiver and I take you. This is probably better. If I took you in the fourth, right? And there were players.
Keep going down, Jeff.
There were not, I didn't drop you because of your talent. I'm just trying to illustrate the point better. So I take you in the fourth, right? And there were seven receivers taken before you that we passed on to take you, right?
Yep.
In their post-draft analysis, which happens a year and then 2 years out, right, you have to be able to justify why you felt that you passed on all those guys, right? So the good organizations do that, right? That's your what they call research and development in the NFL, where you go back and you look at, okay, what did we see with Deshaun Kizer, for example, that made us believe as a second-round pick it was worth waiting and passing on these other guys for you, right? Now, that's a question that has a lot of layers to it, right? For example, you evaluate the player, but you also evaluate the draft at that time. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So if you felt like it was more important to our football team to get this guy with the first pick than Deshaun Kizer with the first pick or Deshaun Watson with the first pick or whatever, because of the needs of the football team at that time, then that's part of the justification process. So it goes a little deeper than just player for player.
So it's not Deshaun Watson against Deshaun Kizer. It's Deshaun Watson against, we got Jabril Peppers, we got David Njoku, and we got Deshaun Kizer for what would have been Deshaun Watson potentially.
Right, and I think when you are in a situation like the Browns are in, and I'm not, I'm just trying to be real. I'm not trying to defend anybody. But when you're in the situation that the Browns are in, there's so many needs in that roster. You have to make a decision. Is this one guy worth these three guys? Right.
Yeah.
For us as an organization. Now, the critics would say, and there are plenty of them out there, that you're talking about the most important position in the game.
Absolutely.
And you better have a guy. You better have a guy there, and you better start from there, and then work out. That's where I have a little bit of an issue with the analytics guys and the Moneyball guys.
Yep.
Because I'm not sure they weigh the quarterback position enough in their evaluation.
Nice.
Because you almost want to take that one off the board almost, because that is in my opinion, you have to start there. And I think you look at the win-loss records of teams that don't have them.
Yeah,
and
I
agree. It's proof.
Yeah, I think I'd rather, Jeff, I know there's a thousand ways to build a roster, but I think I would have taken it. You know, I think you try and grab that franchise quarterback, then you build around them. And I don't know. I just feel that's just one way to do it. You want to make sure you got your guy, and I think it's such a high profile position that heads could roll over this, because like you say, if they do that evaluation, I don't think it matches up to every time Deshaun Watson does a little bit better or Carson Wentz. It's a fascinating one to follow, that's for sure, but a frustrating one for Browns fans.
Yeah, and I think that you know, let's be honest, right? Since you got there, they are 1-22, right? 1-22. Now, I think, and I'm not an NFL historian, you're much better at this kind of stuff than I am, Neil, but I think you got to go to the expansion Tampa Bay Bucks to find that level of futility over 23 games.
Yep.
I don't think that's ever happened in the NFL that I know of.
No, well, the expansion Bucks, they lost their first 24 games in existence, which was kind of the worst streak. So, yeah, the Browns are well on their way to challenging that. It shouldn't happen today, though.
No, it shouldn't happen in this. And you're talking about, this is not a team that's an expansion team.
No.
This isn't a team that just, you know, opened its doors, you know, in August. This is a team that's been around. They've had drafts. They've had, I don't know how many drafts since they came back in, you know, into the league. So it's really, really a tough situation. And, you know, you look at it and say 1-22. That's almost unbelievable in the National Football League with the way the draft is set up and free agency is set up, and they want parity. That
Agreed.
One team could be that bad is shocking.
Let's talk about a couple of other quick things, Jeff, before we make our picks for Week 9 in the NFL. Starting with, I fought the law, and the law eventually won as far as Zeke Elliott's concerned. We should remind everyone that Zeke was never charged with any domestic violence in a court of law, but in the NFL's court of law, he was deemed to be guilty of domestic violence. They've been back and forth and back and forth, and the latest one, Jeff, is that the suspension is now reinstated again. It's felt like Dallas have lent heavier on Zeke than ever before in the last 3 weeks. They knew it was coming or whatever, but he's been getting like 30 touches per game. He's going to be a huge miss, isn't he, for this team?
Yeah, he will be. You know, I listened to Jason talk yesterday about, you know, all the guys that they've got there, and they've all been successful players at the position in the league. And, you know, and that's great coach speak, but the reality of it is they're going to miss him a great deal, I think. And I think this is really, for the Eagles, this is certainly good news, because now, again, that lessens one of the teams that has a chance to catch you in the playoffs. You know, I think this is really interesting, Neil, because, you know, every single one of the things that, like you said, he was never charged in the court of law, right? But in the court of the NFL, there was nothing that the commissioner did that the players didn't collectively bargain in terms of powers that they gave the commissioner.
Yeah. And Jeff, that's an interesting, right? That's a really good point, because we had Peter King join us on our show on Sunday night, as he always does on halftime of game two. And Peter broke the news or revealed to us the news that Jerry Jones is kind of spearheading a group of owners that want to get involved in the commissioner's negotiation for his new deal, the commissioner's new personal deal. And I asked Peter, I said, is that a negotiating ploy, or do they want the commissioner out? And Peter felt that Jerry Jones wanted the commissioner out. And I thought about this, and I thought, Roger Goodell, the last few years, Jeff, has gone up against, head-to-head, against two of the most influential and powerful owners in the NFL, in Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones. But all he's been doing is their bidding and what was actually laid out for him to do. It's just, I think, Jerry doesn't like it because it's now happening to his team.
Well, I think you're right. I think that you know, the commissioner has used the powers that were given to him. And the mandate from the owners and the collectively bargained powers that he gained, I don't see where he's stepping outside of his role. And you know, this domestic violence issue is so it's a lightning rod. I mean, it is.
Agreed.
They handled the Ray Rice thing by their own admission poorly, right? So now here's another situation thrown in their face, and they have to. I mean, I don't see where he could do it any other way, right? And still have any slice of credibility with you know, people that look at these things. What's fascinating to me, Neil, is now you see Papa John's, which is a huge sponsor, you know, for the NFL. Mm. And you see the Papa John's ads with, you know, Peyton Manning and, you know, all this. They have come out this week because their sales have dropped off, and the owner of Papa John's has attacked the NFL and how they handled these protest situations, saying that that's cost him money because people are turning away from the NFL and don't want to be associated with the NFL. And interestingly enough, there were pictures floating around of him and Jerry Jones. Apparently, they're very close.
Mm.
So I don't know if people really appreciate the influence that a guy that like Jerry Jones commands in the world, in the football world.
Yeah. As I said on Sunday night in the studio, Jeff, as we were about to go back to the game, we'd been chatting about this stuff, and I said, these are interesting times that we live in the NFL, obviously on the field, but especially off the field. It feels like there's something like this every week, whether it's Bob McNair and his ill-advised quotes, and then even he backtracked and said, I wasn't talking about the players, I was having a go at the league. I mean, I just feel like it's, you know, some of this stuff, you just feel like people need to kind of not let it die down or disappear, but in this state of kind of heightened awareness and sensitivity, Bob McNair showed he was completely disconnected from his players, and I don't want to say from reality, but from the reality of the situation.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because his reality is not our reality, and it's not
it's definitely not mine.
It's not the mass of NFL fans' reality either, mm. right? And it's certainly, you know, it's amazing that you would use that language when you're talking about your players, mm. because that is, I mean, that is shocking. But again, it's the same thing. And I'm going to tell you something: the players aren't exempt either now, because I've started to see some things, Neil, in social media by the NFL Players Association that I consider saber rattling. So, for example, I see tweets about talking about the lockout in the 80s and the, you know, the scab players crossing the picket lines, and, you know, kind of voicing to the players that, hey, you know, how can you have to put money away for these kind of things so that, you know, you can stand firm through the, you know, through the tough times. If I'm in the NFL, what are they telling me? They're telling me get ready for a work stoppage, or at least
right.
we're going down that road.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, I think this is like you say, these are fascinating times in pro sports. Article today in USA Today about the number of kids playing high school football, and what's really interesting is, you know, in that, and this is because it all fits together, right? It's all as Mark Dressman would say, you know, it's all. We're all related, right?
Yep.
There are less kids playing high school football in California. It's becoming now a regional sport in the United States in terms of high school participation. It's up in the Southeast, while in, you know, some of the Rust Belt places where, like Pennsylvania and Ohio, which have always been football hotbeds,
yep.
there are less kids playing high school football. And some of that demographics, because the demographics of the state have changed, but I think it's fascinating. And I think those are all things that, that the NFL has to keep a pulse of.
Mm. Let's move on and make our picks, because there's so much we could do, probably a three-hour show on all the bits that aren't the games, but we should make our picks for Week 9 in the NFL. And we'll start on Thursday Night Football, Jeff, with the Buffalo Bills, the resurgent, excitable. I watched them up and down, bouncing up and down on the sidelines with Sean McDermott. The Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets. I'm going to take the Bills, Jeff. What do you make of Buffalo?
I like Buffalo. I like the toughness that he's brought to that football team, or got out of that football team. Because I don't know if you can't inject toughness,
sure,
into it, but you can get the toughness that they have out of him. He's got that. He's got production. They're unselfish. You see, they started to, you know, realize that Shady McCoy is the guy they need to, you know, feature. I think he enjoys having that, you know, responsibility. I'm with you, Neil, 100%. There was a play in the game where there was a turnover on the Bills sideline, and it looked like a college team, the way they celebrated on the sideline. They, you know, and not celebrated in some crazy fashion, but just everybody just jumped on top of the guy, and, you know, and it wasn't at a point in the game where it decided the game.
No, Jeff, I think Jeff, just to cut you off, I think there was one similar to that where it was Brandon Tate caught a pass on the sideline. It was just a regular pass, but he kind of dived and caught it. And he was mobbed, and they were all bouncing up and down like Seattle do, you know, when they're all bouncing about. And you're right, those weren't even game winning plays, but that just shows the enthusiasm that they've got at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that's all positive. And, you know, now, again, I don't think KB will be a factor this week, Neil, but certainly, as you know, there's another big target for a quarterback that, frankly, is playing better than a lot of people, you know, notice. And in Tyrod Taylor, so I like the Bills. I think the Jets have done a great job of, you know, getting out of their talent what they have. But I think the Bills are a hot team.
All right, both going Buffalo in that one. The first game on Sunday is a matchup of the last two MVPs of the league. It's Matt Ryan's Falcons at Cam Newton's Panthers. I'm going Atlanta on the road, Jeff. Who do you like?
I'm going to take Carolina in this one, just because of the defense.
All right, so Carolina there. Indianapolis Colts at Houston Texans. So Deshaun Watson, Jeff, he leads the NFL with 19 touchdown passes. The rookie record is held by Peyton Manning and Russell Wilson. It's 26 touchdown passes. Deshaun is on pace for 43. The kid looks special. What do you think?
I think you're right, and I think that he'll shatter that record. So I think that, you know, they'll beat Indianapolis by two touchdowns minimum.
All right, I'm going Houston in that one as well. Let's move on to the Cincinnati Bengals at the Jacksonville Jaguars. So the Jags are coming off a bye. If they can get Marcell Dareus, because he kind of mailed it in Buffalo, Jeff, if they can get him playing, if they can get him in the rotation with Malik Jackson and Calais Campbell, and then you've got, oh my goodness, What a potential, but just got to get him playing, haven't they?
Yeah, they just got to get him on the same page. And I think the guy, the big guy that he'll play next to, Calais Campbell's a key to that, because
he's
a guy that, you know, got that leadership ability, and he'll challenge Marcell to be the Marcell Dareus that he's flashed in Buffalo. Because when he plays, when he wants to play and he's locked and loaded, he is an unblockable guy inside. So I'm going to take Jacksonville because Fournette's going to be healthy too.
Yeah, he's a two-time Pro Bowler, and the Jags have posted 33 sacks in their first seven games this season. Let's move on to Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the New Orleans Saints. Saints never look perfect, Jeff, but five wins in a row in this league is not to be sniffed at, and they're up against a Bucs team that's been a disappointment. It's in New Orleans. I'm going to go Saints.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Saints too. I think in New Orleans, and the fact that the Bucs are struggling to rush the passer, and you know, New Orleans is hard to beat in that dome.
Move on to the Rams at the Giants. Giants are coming off a bye week. Nobody in New York noticed.
Take the Rams.
I'm going to go Rams as well. So this is our game, our first game on Sunday on Sky Sports. The Denver Broncos at the Philadelphia Eagles. So we've got Carson Wentz challenged by what is still a very, very good defense, Jeff. I guess we're very disappointed by Denver's slide, but this is still the number one ranked defense in the NFL. It's been offense that's been the problem for the Broncos, and now they're going to start Brock Osweiler at quarterback.
offense will still be a problem.
Yeah.
Take the Eagles.
Yeah, I'm going to go Philadelphia. I didn't realize his name was Brock anyway. I thought it was just Interception Osweiler. That's what we hear all the time on the TV, you know. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough one for the Broncos, that one. I think Philadelphia keep rolling. Let's move on to the Baltimore Ravens at the Tennessee Titans. Tough one to pick because it's in Tennessee, Jeff. I'm going with the Titans.
Yeah, you know what? Baltimore's a little healthier than they were when we've seen them last couple times.
Yeah, got Brandon Williams back.
Yeah, and that's a big factor in stopping that run that Tennessee wants to do. But I just think Tennessee at Tennessee, and Mariota will be healthier too.
All right, let's move on to the Arizona Cardinals at the San Francisco 49ers. So probably likely to be C.J. Beathard for the near future until they get Garoppolo ready. It's in San Francisco, but I'm going Arizona to win.
You know what? I'm going to take San Francisco because I just, you know, I saw what happened. I saw what happened to that offense when Carson went down.
Yeah, true.
And granted, you know, again, they're going to have a week to, you know, kind of streamline it for the new guy. But golly, I just thought Stanton was struggled against, you know, in the game in Wembley or Twickenham.
Do you know what? I've forgotten about Drew Stanton. So I've made my pick now, so I'm going Arizona, but I don't feel good about it. Dallas are hosting the Kansas City Chiefs. That's our second game on Sunday on Sky Sports. Alex Smith has thrown 16 touchdowns, no interceptions this season. Of course, we think unless there's some... Oh, I just missed one, Jeff. Sorry, I missed out the Redskins and the Seahawks. It's in Seattle. I'm going Seattle.
Take Seattle.
Seattle as well. Then on to the Chiefs and Cowboys. So no Zeke. It's going to put more pressure on Dak Prescott. What do you reckon on the Chiefs, Jeff? Has the shine come off their early start, or have they just been playing good teams? What do you reckon?
Well, I think they've been playing good teams, and you know it's hard to play as high a level as they were playing early in the season. Tom Bahali has started to come back now.
Yeah,
and they get him back. That's going to help them defensively. I think that the quarterback, you know. What is your passer rating? 115 or something like that? It's out, you know, crazy. Mm. So, you know, they've got diversity in their offense. I think they'll get after the Cowboys. Cowboys can rush the passer, but, you know, I just think that Kansas City has more ways to hurt them than most teams do.
All right. Let's move on to Sunday Night Football. The Oakland Raiders at the Miami Dolphins. I haven't even been able to bring myself to look and see if Jay Cutler is fit, but I don't think it matters. I think Oakland win.
Boy, I don't know, man. I tell you what, they have disappointed me so much this year defensively. Just, you know, that's the team that should be in contention for that division title, and they may still be. But I thought the Raiders had a Super Bowl. You know, they were going to be in the Super Bowl conversation.
Jeff. Yeah, quite right.
Yeah, and I just they've really, really disappointed me. Then on the other side of the football, you look at this Dolphin team that, you know, offensively, just I mean. Struggle. Mm. So, you know, they got too many good players to struggle like they're struggling. So I'm going to take the Dolphins at home.
Good man, Jeff. How about that? You're taking the Dolphins and I'm taking the Raiders.
Wait a second, Neil. Whoa, a pig just flew by.
Yeah. last one, the Detroit Lions at the Green Bay Packers on Monday Night Football. I am about to drop a stat bomb on you, Jeffrey. So in the last 20 seasons, 240 players in the NFL have attempted at least 65 passes. Of those 240, Brett Hundley is ranked number 240. The numbers never lie. Detroit win.
You got it, buddy. I'm with you.
Go on, mate.
I tell you what, the Lions are kind of a mystery team, too. And they took a lot of heat for you. Neil, they had almost 500 yards, 480 yards offense last week. They had 17 plays in the red zone and gained 9 yards.
Ouch.
17 plays in the red zone, gained 9 yards. You got to be good the whole field, not just between the 20s.
All right, that's our picks for week 9. Let's take some questions in the mailbag. Sometimes we don't get to a few of these, and I've got some good ones today. One from Scott Buckland, Jeff. He says, how easy will it be for Jay Ajayi or any other player to fit in a scheme mid-season? Sounds like a big ask with the playbook and all. So, Jeff, first of all, on Jay, is it easier because is running back a more instinctive position? Tell us about Jay and how he's going to make that transition, because the Eagles have said LeGarrette Blount is still their starter.
Yeah, I think that it, what he will be to them, at least initially, will be a situational back, right? You know, you look at him in Miami, they got him out on third down.
Yeah.
For pass protection reasons, right? So he's going to have a role. It'll be that situational back role. And again, stretch, zone, counter. I mean, those are, where it's tough on a back is in pass protection, not in the run game.
Jeff, I want to ask you about Jay, actually, and I can't wait to ask Rob Ryan about this on Sunday, because he's actually tried to stop Jay in the NFL in the last couple of years. I've listened to a lot of American radio commentators this week, and they talked about Jay being disruptive. We kind of touched on that earlier. They talked about Jay's knees. We touched on that earlier. They also said that Jay's a bit of, or could be a bit of a one-trick pony who can only run that outside zone play. Is Jay a one-trick pony? What do you make of that?
I think that's an overstatement. I think that he does. That's probably the play he runs better than others.
Right.
But to say he can only do that, I don't think that's being fair to him.
No.
You know, he doesn't call the play.
Right. I agree.
So again, I think that's an oversimplification of, you know, his game.
Good. That's why people come here, Jeff. They get the truth. Let's take another one. This is a good one from, tempting. Craig Taylor says, who should the Vikings go with after the bye, Case Keenum or Teddy Bridgewater? Jeff, I'd say until, because Teddy just makes me nervous. I've watched Teddy kind of working his way back. I was out in training camp and then I saw him on Vikings practice field when they were in London. I don't know, he just still got a tiny bit of a limp there. It was such a serious injury, Jeff. I don't know. I just think Case Keenum, you know, it ain't broke. So why do you need to rush to fix it?
No, I'm with you 100%, Neil. You're 6-2. You're in control. You're playing good football. Case Keenum has done more than an admirable job. And, you know, let's not forget that Teddy Bridgewater, when he was playing, it wasn't like he was Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or even Drew Brees. I mean, he had some serious limitations in his game too. So, you know, that's kind of one of those ones where absence makes the heart grow fonder. You know, who's the fan's favorite all the time? It's the backup quarterback,
right?
Until he has to play. You know, so I think I would, if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm gonna stay with, you know, what I got, and then gradually ease him back in.
All right, take a couple more quickly. James Gow says, do the Eagles look like they could make the Super Bowl? Jeff, the Eagles have started a season 7-1 three times in the Super Bowl era, and twice they reached the Super Bowl, 1980 and 2004. And now they've reached, this is the fourth time, sorry. They've done it three times previously. They're off to a good start. Can they maintain it in the wide open NFL?
I think so, as long as they keep their quarterback healthy, because they play good defense.
Yeah.
They can run the football. They got weapons outside. So I don't see a weakness in the game as long as they can keep the quarterback on, you know, playing.
All right. I'm just going to see if I can find one more to finish up. James Bignall is being naughty, Jeff. He says, is this weekend the best chance for the Browns not to lose? The Browns are on the bye week, so that's a harsh one. And then, Jeff, this one's a good one, actually, just to finish us off. Roger Grace says, can Jeff talk us through the anatomy of a trade? So, Kelvin Benjamin from Carolina to Buffalo is an example we saw this week. But, Jeff, how does it work? Are you just picking up the phone? For New England, we don't know if San Francisco rang New England or if New England rang San Francisco. But is that how things start? Is it literally shady room, pick up the phone, make a call?
Basically, yes. You have a need. You look at the board of, you know, in every NFL city, any NFL offices, the personnel office, every player on every team, you got the depth charts up on the wall with, you know, the magnetic guys and the whole deal, right? And so you look at other people's rosters, say, hey, they may be interested in this. We have a need to move this guy, and so let's get on the phone and see what they think. Or the other happens where you have a need and you go out and start reaching out to people and say, hey, listen, you know, are you interested? Or you can do it, you know, by having somebody else get that information to you, you know, to a team, right? So that you're not seen as, because a lot of this stuff gets leaked, and you don't want to leak out that you're, you know, like the Cole Beasley thing, where all of a sudden there was a rumor that he was going to get traded by the Cowboys, and so Jason Garrett had to call him in and say, Cole, we're not trading him. But see, that kind of stuff circulates around. So once it gets past the phone stages, then it gets into the, you know, okay, now you got to look at the contract that you're taking and what's going to mean against your cap, and it's a detailed, long process. It's not like just pick up the phone and you're trading football cards.
No, Jeff, I think it's interesting because we always look at the draft and we always look at how much scouting departments pay attention to the players coming out of college. But when I was out in Minnesota in the summer and I sat down with Rick Spielman, and it was interesting to get his take on pro scouting as well. And Rick told me, and he said it's nothing groundbreaking. He said every general manager around the NFL will do this, but we have a grade on every single player in the NFL. So if the third string running back from the Philadelphia Eagles becomes available, the Minnesota Vikings would have a grade on him and work out how he fits into their offense. So everyone is scouting everyone else.
Exactly. And you don't have time when you're talking about getting a trade done. You don't have time to go back and look at all the, you know, all the runs of that third round or that third string back. There are people who have all that at their fingertips. And that's their responsibility. And you know, again, like you say, every player is graded. And then in the off season, the coaches typically will go back and they will grade the players in the league at their position. So that if, in fact, a guy becomes available, you know, let's say Bill Callahan says, I like this guy as the next best left tackle in the National Football League, then they know that. So it's a detailed process. It takes a lot of time.
All right. Good stuff, Jeff. I had a tweet earlier this week when we were delayed doing this podcast where somebody asked me if I traded you to BT Sport. And I think your insight today is the reason why I turned down that trade, because that trade offer was there and I didn't want to get rid of you. I think there's a few more. You're still an ascending player.
Well, it's always good to be wanted.
There we go.
Isn't that what AJ McCarron said?
Yeah, it was good to be wanted, but I'm not going to play in Cleveland. So this has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk. He's done wonders from what I'm going to guess was a coffee shop. Right, Jeff?
You got it, my brother.
Thought it might have been. So until next week, say goodbye to the good folks, Coach.
Aloha.